I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Today, we continue our participation with the NPR project, A Nation Engaged, that aims to spark conversations that matter. We're asking what you want the new president to know about you and your community as he takes office. That's right, we want you to join our in-studio guests with your calls and tweets to answer this and other important questions. Do you think our nation is united or divided? What are your hopes and your fears? What do you want to see from the new administration during the next 4 years? It's your perspective that counts. Later, Brian McTavish will bring us the weekend to-do list. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Beginning last year, KCUR and this program participated in NPR's project A Nation Engaged that looks at identity and politics. Periodically, we would be invited to participate by looking at specific topics. Now, as Donald Trump prepares to take the oath of office for President of the United States, we're back with this question. What do you want the new president to know about you or your community as he takes office? We don't want to speculate or theorize about this, and we don't want to rehash the election. Instead, we're asking you to give us your answer here. Pick up the phone and give us a call, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCURUpToDate. To help us get the conversation going here, our professor Deborah Smith, she's chair of the sociology department here at UMKC. And Professor, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thank you.
Also with us is Andrea Clements. She's executive director of a health initiative up in Atchison, Kansas. Andrea, good morning.
Good morning.
Jason Kamis is also with us. He's president of the Gardner-Edgerton Chamber of Commerce. Jason, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
So, Deborah, let me go to Andrea here and just begin this conversation. Andrea, what do you want the new president to know about you or your community as he takes office? And again, you're talking to us this morning from up in Atchison on the Kansas side.
I am. Thank you. I want our new president to know that I'm a pretty average representation of middle America. I'm a working mom, husband, two kids, a dog. And that being said, I really need him to know that I'm trusting him to keep families like mine who work hard and love our country and our neighbors in mind when he's making decisions about our community's future. I really hope that he can kind of practice the pause, I guess, if you would like to think of it that way, to stop and think and really try to put himself in the shoes of the many Americans that he is serving before he makes all the tough decisions that are going to be before him.
And so what do you want from the new administration, Andrea, during the next 4 years? What would you like to see this administration do?
Well, I really am hopeful that he is able and the administration is able to bring our country together. I feel like we are divided right now in ways that we may not have been in the recent past. And I think we focus on our differences a little more than we necessarily need to. And I think by focusing on the common ground, the things that we have in common, we really will be able, that's how our administration at the national level and at the state level and within our local communities, that's how we can really move forward together, is by searching for that common ground. So I'm hopeful that he can be a role model to that and his administration can begin to bring our country together.
The question on the table for our listeners, what do you want the new president to know about you or your community as he takes office. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. This is meant to be a community conversation, folks, so I hope you'll engage today and give us a shout. Option two is to give us shoot us a tweet at KCUR up to date. Andrea Clements, again, Executive Director of a Health Initiative up in Atchison. So what are your hopes as you look down the road the next few years?
I hope that we can start to, meaning all levels of elected officials, can begin to work across party lines and work with those individuals who may not see things as we see them. Like I mentioned before, I feel like we really have more in common than we have more differences, and our leaders have an opportunity now to be role models and to work in a spirit of collaboration and to role model the inclusive problem solving and teamwork that is key to really solving some of the issues that our country is facing now,
right,
and our local communities are facing now.
Okay, Andrea, you'll be with us for a while here. Let me turn the focus here to Jason Kamis, again, president of the Gardner-Edgerton Chamber of Commerce. Jason, you just heard Andrea talk about this. I'm wondering, maybe the same basic question, what do you want the new president to know about your community in Gardner-Edgerton and as he takes office here?
Well, I think the big thing I'd want him to know is that there are a lot of us who were maybe not fans of the incoming president, and he might not have been our first choice. However, you know, he is our president, and we're going to support him, and we want to see things improved in our communities, in our nation. And this is an opportunity for him to focus on issues, and I think that will be the how we'll judge him 2 years from now, 1 year from now, 60 days, that issues that directly affect us, whether it's healthcare for one family, immigration for another family, regulations for businesses. That's how we're going to look at this president. I think we've already seen our society and our community somewhat maybe churn away from some of the social aspects of the things that the president, incoming president, has maybe said or done in the past. And our hope is that our focus is on the issues in the end, and that we see some improvement in our lives, whatever that may be.
You know, Professor Deborah Smith, chair of the sociology department at UMKC, we're hearing, I don't mean to stereotype, but regular folks hoping that this administration's policies trickle all the way down to them. And I'm wondering, is that an unusual expectation or hope? And what do you make of it?
I think that it has been very eloquently said already.
I think so, too.
Yeah. How we as a society are looking to our leaders to lead us, actually doing the leading. I think leaders need to understand that they can't know everything. There's no way to know everything. And so one would hope that our President Trump would learn to lean on experts in terms of, you know, no, not just people who have opinions about particular things, but people who actually have expertise. I actually grew up inside the Beltway. My dad was a federal worker all of his life, and I know a lot of folks that work in the federal government there. And there's two layers, right? There's the layer of the administration and the people who are appointed, and then there's all the other regular folks that sort of make the government run. And so I'm hopeful that the president will sort of let people do their jobs, mm-hmm, because they are good at it. And a lot of, you know, people who have PhDs and those sorts of things that are doing the research, that are working for the National Cancer Institute, who's working for the National Science Foundation, and just allowing the sort of bureaucracy to continue.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, maybe a bureaucracy is a good thing that we have right now, because there are layers upon layers. And we do have, you know, three three areas of government. And so I think we tend to focus on personalities, and it's easy to do, and that's what happened in the fall. But there's a whole system. And I would also just the federal nature of our government, that we can have individual, you know, city councils, et cetera, like people being engaged at that level, because there is a lot of power for the regular people to have a lot of ability to interact and affect change at that level.
I was going to say, it's always so interesting to me. We're hearing from regular folks here, and sometimes you forget in the tumult of American politics that at the end of the day, the lives and fortunes of regular people, regular families in Atchison, Kansas, are very much on the line here as this new administration comes into office.
Absolutely.
Let's go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888 is the number. What do you want the new president to know about you or your community as he takes office here? Let's go to Paul from Kansas City, Missouri. Paul, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Mr. Kresge. This creative episode here. Real quick, I think Mr. Trump should know that, in my opinion, education is the most important resolve for any issue that concerns this country at any region or state, everything from national defense, health care, even education in itself. Those are going to be the problems that we want to solve. Education is going to be that key answer.
Does that make sense for what you're seeing, Jason, out in Gardner-Edgerton? Education, obviously a concern to so many folks.
I think so. I think people, it makes a difference to young families. It makes a difference to families with older children. It makes a difference to an educated workforce as we talk about needing new types of workers in the next 10 or 20 years. I think that is a huge piece that it touches inner city communities, major markets, as well as rural communities in the central part of Kansas.
Is there a challenge, Jason, in Gardner-Edgerton that the new administration might address? Is there something, an issue in your community that you're seeking help from the federal government for, or maybe not?
You know, I think for us, Gardner and Edgerton has really become a transit hub.
Absolutely.
And a transportation hub. And I think transportation infrastructure is huge. And whether that is rail, air, automobile, trucking industry, I think that's going to be a big role for the Gardner Edgerton community for years to come.
And in good roads, he talks about an infrastructure package that might be important to somebody like you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Andrea, I'm wondering, up in Atchison, is there an issue there that you're hoping the federal government can touch in the next few years that would be very helpful to your community?
Yeah, similar to what you were just mentioning, we in Atchison would benefit from kind of an improved and continue to build upon our infrastructure and our built environment. However, we understand that geographically, we are not necessarily a key transportation hub as maybe Gardner-Edgerton is.
Mm-hmm.
We, though, are beginning to understand in our community that we need to support our small businesses, so to support our entrepreneurs, our local entrepreneurs, and that is probably the way that we can grow businesses, that we can grow jobs in our community, and the ways that we can bring new, smaller enterprises into our community. So we would like support in supporting our small businesses, supporting entrepreneurs.
And I think it's fair to say that the incoming president has talked very directly about exactly those concerns, Andrea.
Correct. I think that he has. And hopefully we can see the benefits of that discussion here in our community.
Again, the question on the table here, what do you want the new president to know about you or your community as he takes office? 816-235-2888 is the phone number here. Tweet us at KCUR up to date. Some other interesting responses coming in on social media. Gabby wrote us with this answer. I want the new president to know that as a married gay woman, stepmom, and grandmother, me and my family and community are also Americans. We're not going back into the closet, and I truly hope that you meant and will continue your public support of the LGBT community and our basic civil rights, that I will always speak up against discrimination in all its forms, including against my Muslim brothers and sisters and racism in general, particularly against African Americans and the Latino community. Interesting thoughts there. Carol Deal wrote me on my Facebook page last night, if I were to talk to President-elect Trump, I would love for him to be aware of how hard the urban core of the cities are fighting to bring their communities back to being safe, less blighted, and clean by working together as neighborhood groups. And the key word here is together. And my prayers are that people reunite under his guidance and are able to keep working to make their neighborhoods great again. With his help, our local government, government's help, and each other pulling together in spite of our differences. We all have to live together and all want the same thing, a safe place to call home. Professor, what are you thinking here as you listen to the thoughts and concerns of some of your fellow citizens here?
I will just echo that we're all in it together and that we're more similar than we are different, as the other, as Andrea has said.
And again, that's so lost in our political campaigns, isn't it?
Right. And, you know, news and shock, you know, that people, it's new. So we want to think about it. But really, when we live, we want people to be kind. We want people to be nice to each other. We want to be supportive. Americans are, you know, we're the biggest group that in the world that volunteers. We volunteer at amazing levels that sort of any other country is. It's unheard of. And also the money that we give as well. So both our voluntary contributions in time and money, we're the best country in the world at that. And so if we kind of can go back to the, we're sort of all in it together and we're here to help each other and do, you know, to make America as great as it can be. I'm not sure it was great. I'm not sure it will be great, but, you know, we can all work together to make it as great as it can be.
What challenges are you facing that maybe the new administration can help you with or your community? 816-235-2888 is our number. Megan tweeted this, I'd like to tell him a million things about my life and community, and I feel the best way to get people to listen is to listen first and find common ground as a starting point. Lisa wrote us with this, I would want the new president to know that many people in red states see themselves as moderates. As a board member of the mainstream coalition, I can attest to the fact that there are people from both parties who do not support the extremist policies of either party. That note is from Lisa here. Let's go to Edward from Lansing. Edward, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you, Edward. Go ahead.
Thank you. My message for President-elect Trump is this. I am a member of a generation that's coming into the workforce. In this generation, I'm 18, we really feel strongly that America is a place for opportunity that is inclusive of everybody. Everyone should have an opportunity to have a good-paying job and to live happily and free from fear. And kind of touching on what Gabby said earlier on social media, I feel that the LGBT community definitely needs to have a place in this country and that our generation will not stand for any repeal or rollback of basic human rights for any group, whether that's the LGBT community or based off of someone's religion, such as following Islam, or any cultural identifier. We will not stand for it.
And Edward, I'm wondering, is that a fear you have as this new administration takes office, that those kinds of rollbacks of basic rights might indeed be in the offing?
I personally do have that fear. I see that fear among many people of my generation, that the ideals of America may not be fully expressed by our new president-elect and vice president-elect, specifically on the LGBT issues. We have a lot of fears about Vice President-elect Pence and his record as Indiana governor, but also with the rhetoric about banning immigration from religious groups and things like that. And we, as a generation, want Donald Trump to know, and I speak for the majority of our generation, I would think, that we feel that in 2017, that's simply not something we can tolerate.
Right. Edward, thank you. Professor Smith, hop in here.
I definitely want to just reiterate that generations are thinking differently. Like, just like he was saying, that the ideas about race, the ideas about difference, are fundamentally seen from a different perspective for the younger generation because they're growing up in a more multi-generation group of people, right?
It's a different mindset than the president-elect's mindset,
right?
Perhaps coming from a different generation.
Yeah, very much from a different generation. So something like 6 out of 10 children right now are not white in the United States. And so our children are having this experience and they're learning in kindergarten, you know, be nice to everybody, and everybody doesn't look like each other. And
right.
So they, and very interestingly, if you ask young people about their race, they might answer differently if they're answering at home versus at school.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So there's
in what way, you mean?
Well, when they're asked the question at home, maybe they feel more that they need to say something that their parents would agree with, and maybe they feel a little bit more safe saying something different at school. So there's some really interesting research in terms of just where physically the kids are when they're answering the question. So these kids have to shift a lot more in a way that maybe the older generations didn't, particularly the baby boomers.
Okay, hopes and fears and what you want the new president to know about your situation or your communities, that's our topic today. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we hope you'll call us at 816-235-2888 with your thoughts and ideas. We'll continue this good conversation. And later on, Brian McTavish will be here with some cool things to do on your weekend. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. Hey, we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. On yesterday's program, we learned about the historical role of political moderates, and we heard the story of the real-life bear behind Winnie the Pooh on National Winnie the Pooh Day, which was yesterday. Go to kcur.org/uptodate to hear those conversations. We're off tomorrow so that KCUR can bring you NPR's coverage of Donald Trump's inauguration. On Monday, the film critics are in the house with the best foreign, indie, and documentary films. Well, this segment, we're talking about hopes and aspirations for this new administration taking office tomorrow. I'm joined in studio here by Professor Deborah Smith from UMKC, Jason Kamis, president of the Gardner Edgerton Chamber of Commerce. Also joining us from Atchison this morning, Andrea Clements, executive director of a health initiative. Looking for your responses and thoughts about all this, 816-235-2888. Let's go to some phone calls here again, and Dana from Midtown, Kansas City. Dana, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thank you. I would like the president to know that our nation's health care should not be a for-profit industry, and that health care is a right, not a privilege.
Okay. Dana, I'm glad you mentioned it. Is this a concern in your life, Dana?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
I was very pleased when the other day our new president said that he intends to make health care available for everyone. And I hope he pulls too on that promise. And it's nice that 20 million people have been given health care over Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see that made 100% of our nation's population.
Okay. I'm glad you called, Dana. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Laura wrote to me on Facebook last night and said something very similar. I would like him to know that we're concerned about health care staying affordable and leaving Medicare and elderly services alone. Paul writes me, don't do anything, Mr. President-elect. Don't let him know we're here or he'll surely mess things up. Micah Conkling wanted him to know that we've got wonderful barbecue here. Really, you've got to eat this barbecue. It's the best barbecue. Terrific sauce. Another one, Russell Buchanan mentioned farm subsidies and transportation quality infrastructure are key to our health as a city out here in the heartland. So other ideas, and Jason has mentioned something very similar here in our conversation. How about your fears, Jason, going forward as you look at the new administration and what it might mean? How about that?
Well, I think my biggest fear is the unknown, and I'm somebody who actually loves change. personally and my family life and everything else. And I have this optimism.
You might be alone in that, by the way.
I know. I have this optimism about a president, anytime a president comes in, that will change things for the better. But right now, we don't seem to know what's going to change. And I think that's scary for – it's actually scary for me as well as a lot of other people. We see cabinet appointees that are of one extreme or the other. We hear a lot of rhetoric. We hear one thing one day, and then we see a tweet later on that afternoon that contradicts whatever was said that morning. And I think that level of instability, as people say, we're going to have to get used to it. But I think that makes swallowing change a lot harder because we don't know when it's actually going to happen.
Yeah, Professor.
I think that the idea of pause is very helpful.
Meaning.
Tweets are instantaneous, right? And then Trump says healthcare for everyone. And then people are like, well, he didn't really mean that. And again, sort of we can fall back on the fact that these are statements that are – they're statements, but they are not actions,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we do have this the pause is the fact that we do have this whole level of bureaucracy that is going to have to move, and it's harder to move the ship. I mean, yes, the captain decides where the ship goes, but it takes a while for it to move. And at some point in time, you know, maybe one of the crew members are like, this isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I also embrace change too. Like, how can you not? It's just going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of being thoughtful. I'm hoping that people will sort of learn things like when people find out that ACA is Obamacare, right? When Affordable Care Act is Obamacare. So mm-hmm. just even the words for people to be understanding what we're actually talking about, or the fact I remember a citizen was saying to President Obama, like, don't take away my Medicare. And Obama's like, you do realize that the government is behind Obama, you know, Medicare. And the person was like, oh, I didn't know that. So
yeah.
Just sort of basic things, how the government works. I think this is a great opportunity. We just had, I just heard yesterday, I like the phrase, don't waste a good crisis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is an opportunity for people to learn.
Andrea Clements, again, up in Atchison, I wanted to ask you the same question I just asked Jason about your biggest fears as you look down the road here.
My biggest fears kind of just go with what I was talking about earlier, that we become a more divided and paranoid country and that we act on those fears and that paranoia.
How can a president really help with that, Andrea?
I think, as just was mentioned, being mindful and thoughtful and pausing when tweeting, sending out tweets. That seems to be his favorite method of communication, and being a good role model, like I mentioned earlier, and really stopping with these extremes. It seems, at least portrayed a lot of times, I think, in the media, that everything and everyone is such an extreme, has extreme point of view and extreme feelings about things. And while that's okay, we have to just not always be in this attack mode. I feel like if we would just, people would stop and listen, actually listen, instead of trying to push their own agenda, we really will get further.
Is that why some people say we're drifting apart, Andrea, this notion of what you just said, these extreme positions that everybody's taken?
I feel so. I feel that. I feel that people just kind of want to be the... well, for lack of a better word, just be that extreme, be totally on one side or the other and not willing to meet in the middle. I think that politics is about meeting in the middle. And,
right.
Well, living in the community, period, is about meeting in the middle and finding things that we can agree on. And you can maintain those extreme views, but understand that working to bring a country along or working to bring a community along is going to require you to set some of those aside to do the business of running a nation or running a community.
Jason Kame is president of the Gardner-Edgerton Chamber of Commerce. I'm just wondering if you buy the notion that Andrea was just talking about, that we have drifted apart, what's your sense of why that's happened?
I don't know necessarily why it's happened, but I actually this is probably my one area where I'm somewhat of a pessimist, and I think we are going to continue to move further apart. And I think, to me, I think the easiest way to bring things back together, rather than focusing on some of the softer stuff, I think at this point in time, we need to focus on policies. And, you know, there, I don't know anyone who doesn't believe everybody should have health care.
Mm-hmm.
But it's how we get there. And that, to me, is what we have to focus on. How do we get there, whether it's a single-payer system or all private or some combination of everything in between? I think once we start getting we have success with a particular policy, something that works well for 90% or 100% of our country, then we will start to come back together quicker than just saying we got to bring ourselves back together. Then we can now talk and actually do something.
You know, Professor Deborah Smith, again from UMKC, this notion that so many people believe we are divided and not unified, that causes, it seems, based on this conversation today and others, that it causes such anxiety. I'm wondering what you've noticed out there.
I think that the rhetoric that was said in the last year or so doesn't show that we drifted apart. It shows that we are apart. Like, I think that sort of picked up the rock and we saw what was underneath of it. And so in a lot of ways, you can't change what you don't acknowledge. And in a lot of ways, this is the best thing. Now we know how people really do feel. We really do still have these levels of racism that are, we thought we were done with that, but we know that we're done. We're not. Or issues of sexism and sexual harassment. We know that we're not done. And so therefore, we do have to set aside the soft issues and really work at it. I think that, again, we as a society, our strength is our diversity.
Mm-hmm.
People don't quite understand that. That's why I always encourage students to go to another country to sort of see how they do things. And when you get back here, you're like, wow, we're not perfect, but it's pretty amazing what we've been able to do.
Speaking of diversity, I want to go to Stefano from Kansas City, Missouri, with a comment just on that point. Stefano, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I come from a lineage of Italian and Puerto Rican parents, so I definitely agree with that point. I just think that it makes it a little bit stronger whenever we have the contributions from as many cultures as possible. Take what works, and then what doesn't work, well, we just throw it by the wayside. But you do what you can with that. Thank you.
Yeah. Stefano, thank you very much for the phone call. I appreciate it. Boy, we covered a lot of ground here. I want to thank Professor Deborah Smith, Chair of the Sociology Department here at UMKC. Thanks for your comments, Deborah. Appreciate it. Andrea Clements, Executive Director of a Health Initiative up in Atchison. Andrea, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Jason Kamis, President of the Gardner-Edgerton Chamber. Thanks for your good comments as well.
Thank you.
I want to thank our audience for your participation today and encourage you to tune in next week as KCUR begins airing Indivisible. That's an evening talk show. It's a live call-in program which will air on KCUR from 7 to 8 Monday through Thursday. Each evening with a different focus and a different host, Indivisible will be the gathering place for everyday Americans to talk, debate, and find common cause in the first 100 days of the Trump administration. We hope you'll join in, listen, participate, and share your Midwestern perspectives as part of this new national discourse. So again, thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Where kids live has an impact on how well kids learn. That's a well-documented fact. But it's also a problem because it means even the best schools can sometimes only do so much. KCUR is partnering with American Public Square to talk about neighborhoods and education at an event next Tuesday evening. It's called Live and Learn. KCUR's Brian Ellison is moderating that event, and he's here to spend a few minutes with us to talk about these issues and next week's event. And Brian, always good to have you.
Good to see you, Steve. Thanks.
So set this up for us, Brian. What are we talking about here exactly?
Well, as you know, Steve, Kansas City is a city that talks a lot about education. We have a mayor who's deeply interested in educational issues. We have superintendents who speak about these issues on the national scene. But there's something else we have, and that's pretty wide disparities. We have 99th percentile A-plus school districts, and we have districts that have lost their accreditation. And much of the disparity seems connected with where the schools are. Where you live has a pretty profound impact on how you learn.
I was going to say, KCUR's Ellie Moxley is also walking the studio here, and she covers education. What is that connection between neighborhoods and the educational experience, Ellie? What have you noticed over the years?
I mean, I don't think I can emphasize how much out-of-school factors matter for a lot of these kids. I spent my morning actually at King Elementary in KCPS, and I was talking to the attendance specialist about how important it is just to get kids to school on time and how difficult of a message that sometimes is to get to parents. But once they start understanding it, then they can work with the school district to work with things like, say, mom works second shift, and she's not there in the morning to help get the kids off to school, so they're relying on an older sibling to help. There's just so many little things in these kids' lives, depending on where they live, that can make a difference about whether or not they're getting an education.
Even getting them in the door, you're saying?
Just getting them in the door.
Brian, it seems like just looking at the guest list for your panel discussion next week gives us a sense of some of the issues at stake here. Let's start with Kansas City Mayor Sly James, who isn't an education official, not part of his job description, and yet he's expressed quite an interest in Kansas City schools.
Yeah, I think for a mayor, Sly James talks a lot about education, and he talks about it on a number of levels. He talks about it as an economic development issue, that in order to be a top-ranked world-class city, we have to have good schools. It affects what companies come here and so on. But it also talks about it going both ways. And often, as I know you've heard him do this, Steve, he gets into his personal story about growing up on the East Side, but having the opportunity to go to Bishop Hogan High School, a private mm-hmm. school, and being nearly alone there as a person of color, sort of leaving his neighborhood each day to go to this to get his education. And that's part of his story. It's something he cares about, and it affects, I think, how he thinks about the role of schools in a community.
And Brian, you've also been talking with superintendents.
That's right. We've got both Kansas City Public Schools Superintendent Mark Bedell and Shawnee Mission School District Superintendent Jim Hinson coming. You know, those are two districts that on the surface are very different, and they are very different. But on the other hand, they both deal with some of the same questions. How do you deal with a diverse set of neighborhoods served by the same school district? Of course, both of them are perhaps facing some real challenges with state funding as well that might affect how they work in their neighborhoods.
Ellie, have we had any success stories out there? Has anyone seen improvement in education and previously challenged neighborhoods that you've noticed?
Well, going back to Superintendent Hinson, he obviously came over from the Missouri side, the independent school district. He led that district through the transition where they took some of the Independence address, but Kansas City Public Schools into the Independence district. This was around 2007.
Right.
And I actually started my career at the Independence Examiner and lived across the street from Fairmount Elementary for a couple of years. And that was one of the schools. And you're talking about the same neighborhoods, the same kids, the same families, and in large part, the same teachers, but different kind of leadership styles and directions. So it can be done. We saw things like the graduation rate going up at Van Horn High School and, you know, overall improvement in test scores in these schools. So things can be done, but it's going to take some different approaches sometimes.
Brian, just finally here, public schools aren't the only story of education in Kansas City. There have been other approaches tried. What do we know there?
Well, so another member of the panel in next week's event is Dr. Kristen Droege. She's executive director of the Children of the World Charter School, one of the newest charter schools in the metro. And one of the things that she'll talk about is how her school tries to draw on a wide variety of neighborhoods. That's part of their mission statement. It's part of their purpose to bring in that diversity. But that presents a new set of challenges and has caused them to focus on students, on individualized learning and how every student is different. So it takes this conversation about neighborhoods to another level. I'm really looking forward to the panel.
I was going to say the panel's title, Live and Learn, Neighborhoods, Education, Transformation. It's next Tuesday, a reception at 6, the event itself at 6:30. It's all going to take place at Village Presbyterian Church in Prairie Village. It's free. You can RSVP at AmericanPublicSquare.org. Brian Ellison, Ellie Moxley, thanks for coming in. Always good to have you guys.
Thank you,
Steve.
Coming up, Brian McTavish and the famous weekend to-do list.
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm the guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm a working for the state. I'm the highway patrol.
Man, after all this serious talk this morning, I like listening to a little Junior Brown.
Oh, yeah.
That sort of picks things up a little bit.
You bet.
Yeah.
Let's have some serious fun here, shall we,
Steve? Well, I should say it's nice to see you again.
You know,
it's been a few weeks.
It has been a few weeks, and that's too many that I have been able to sit here and chit-chat with you about what to do on the weekend.
With a new left hip, do I sound better?
Have you talked about this previously?
Do I sound better? Come on.
Give me
a little bit here.
I thought you sounded more confident, more reassured, but I wouldn't say better, because how do you get better than the best,
pal? I'm in a whole lot less pain than I was. I was telling our staff here the last couple of days before surgery, I could barely sit in the chair here. I was so uncomfortable.
But you masked it.
I masked it.
Oh,
we danced pretty good.
Oh, you did good.
Tell me more about Junior Brown.
The great Junior Brown, good time all the time, country music from the inventor of the super cool Git Steel double neck guitar.
Wow.
Okay, here's what the Git Steel is. It's 2-in-1, right? He likes to go lickety-split between his 6-string electric, his regular traditional guitar, and then his lap steel. So he's combined, back in the mid-80s, he had it custom built, and he has 2 or 3 versions of this, right?
Wow.
It's really amazing to watch him go. He just goes back and forth with the facility of a master. He will do this song. He will do what we're hearing, which is Highway Patrol. He will do My Wife Thinks You're Dead, which is what he is saying to the woman he used to love long ago who comes knocking on his door. No, go away, baby. My wife thinks you're dead. And also, I know, he's really a lot of laughs and a lot of fun and so talented. But also, if you're a fan of that Better Call Saul show, which is the spinoff of what?
Breaking Bad.
He does the theme song, Better Call Saul. So I bet he does that too. 8:30. Get there early at 8, Friday at Knuckleheads.
Yeah.
Do it.
Talk some skating.
I cannot skate.
Well, I can't do it very well either.
I bet with that new hip you could do circles around me.
Yeah, but not yet. Pretty soon. It's only been 3 weeks.
No more rail holding for you, my friend.
Yeah,
okay,
right,
this weekend it's the culmination of the 2017 U.S. Figure Skating Championships. Now, there's a highly competitive element all the way through Saturday night, where the nation's best amateurs are vying for top honors, right? But then on Sunday, and this is all happening at the Sprint Center, on Sunday night you have the non-competitive skating spectacular, in which they jettison the rule book and they allow the medalists and other exceptional participants of the affair to just basically show off their talents in a wide-open theatrical showcase. And here's something else. This is sort of promotional, but I think it's an opportunity, so we'll mention it here. Also, 1988 Olympic skating champion Brian Boitano is going to make I do too. He was fantastic. He's going to make a free, open-to-the-public personal appearance from 5:30 to 7:30. That's Friday night at the Cleveland Cork Restaurant just across the street from the Sprint Center at the Kansas City Power and Light District. So get an autograph or have your picture taken with Brian Boitano.
Be sure to see Brian's 6 moving things to do in Kansas City this weekend. Just go to kcur.org. Okay, let's move on to comedian Kevin Farley.
Right. Now, it's been 20 years this year,
20 years
since Chris Farley, the famously funny fellow,
on
Saturday
Night
Live, and
he
made
terrific.
made some funny. They weren't
sort of the second coming of John Belushi in some ways.
If you say so.
Well, at least that's how I thought.
Is that just your new hip talking?
It could be.
Anyway, very, very funny guy who literally threw his weight around, but he did have a weight problem and a drug problem, and he did unfortunately die, sadly, tragically.
Is Kevin related?
Drug overdose in 1997. Yes. He is related. He is Kevin Farley, and Kevin Farley is coming. He is the brother of Chris Farley.
Wow.
He is at, I know. And Chris Farley would let his younger, I should get this out. Kevin Farley performing stand-up comedy, 8:00 tonight, 2 shows Friday night, 2 shows Saturday night, and then 1 show Sunday at Stanford & Sons Comedy Club, which recently relocated back to the Legend Shopping Center in KCK. But basically,
Chris Farley, who's no longer with us, he let his younger brother Kevin be in movies, Tommy Boy, Black Sheep, and that sort of thing. And then other SNL type people like Adam Sandler cast Kevin in The Waterboy. So this guy's been in a lot of movies.
We got a little clip here too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Let's not forget the clip. Let's see. Here we go.
I hate song lyrics, you know, because they're sometimes really f-ing stupid, right? But that Elton John song, and it goes, "If I was a sculptor, but then again, no." Then don't f-ing write it. I need your thought process, Elton. Just say you're a guy traveling in a traveling show. Whatever, don't say that line. Or I shot the sheriff, but I didn't shoot the deputy. But you shot the sheriff. Because you're on trial for shooting the sheriff. I don't care what you did to the deputy. We all know he's right here. But you shot Sheriff John Brown.
That's Kevin Farley, bunch of times today, Friday and Saturday, out at the Legends
and
at
Sunday.
Sanford and Sons.
Yeah,
and
check
Sunday.
Him out. And looks a lot like his brother. Looks a lot like him.
Well, I come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee.
What do we have here?
Well, that's the old folk standby, Oh, Susanna. Hmm. But we have a brand new show by a kind of a go-to gal when it comes to being a provocateur. That would be Susanna Lee, who has titled her one-woman tell-all show, Oh, Susanna. Hmm. So she's a combo of stand-up comedy. She's a storyteller. And she has done a lot of burlesque entertaining in the past. I don't know if she'll take any of it off. I suspect not. When she puts on shows at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock Friday night and Saturday night. And get this, Susanna Lee is also known as Lucky Deluxe. This is also the opening of her Outburst Performance Gallery space at 1715 Wyandotte. So she's opening her own place. It'll be a lot of laughs, a lot of fun, and it's adults only, let me tell you.
Okay, and finally today... I've never understood this next event. Just never have gotten it. Whatever.
Have you ever?
Nope.
No. Nope. But you got on the back of a motorcycle.
No, not really. Mom was an emergency room nurse at one point in her career, and she used to say, "You are never getting on one of those."
I got on the back of a motorcycle when you didn't even have to wear a helmet. This was back in the 60s, right?
I remember.
And I got to the end of the block. My mother flipped out.
Yep.
And I got off the motorcycle. Anyway.
Speaking of motorcycles.
We're talking about the Nitro Arena Cross Tour. It hits our town at 7:30 Friday and Saturday night downtown at the Sprint Center. It's dirt track motorcycle racing, all-terrain vehicle racing, and something called a freestyle motocross jump-off. You know what that is?
No.
That's where you go 60 feet
Don't
into
care.
The... You know what? We should go and just figure it out. We should just go and enjoy it and have a vicarious thrill on a motorcycle we'll never ride.
Good luck getting me in the doors. That's Brian McTavish with this week's Weekend To-Do List. Thanks, buddy.
You were very, very hip today, by the way. Very nice.
We're off tomorrow as KCUR airs NPR's coverage of President-elect Donald Trump's inauguration. You can find us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up To Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Claire Todd Okoro. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.